Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and James Kovacevic online. Hey, James.
Hi, Fred. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. It's getting to be, when this session, this recording comes out, it's going to be starting to be springtime. Hopefully, you're experiencing in the future when this gets aired a nice thaw rather than the last time we talked. It was, I think you mentioned it was 10 below.
Yeah, well, right now it's probably 50 degrees out, and we got about 6 inches of rain over the last day and a half. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Hey, put the shorts on and go wash the car. You're good.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I was working on a list of topics to talk about, and I was looking over some of the forums and different discussion groups and looking at the different kinds of questions and comments that we're getting on the show. And one of them that came across got my attention was a Uptime magazine that I get regularly. I think it comes out like 4, 5, 6 times a month, I believe. And one of the articles talked about getting management commitment. Actually, the title was Harvest Management Commitment, although he never really used that analogy in the article. So I don't know what somebody else must have titled it, by James Morafetis, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing right, but I'll put it in the show notes. But the gist of his article was that an assumption that he's made right in the start of the article was that you need management support if you're, say, a maintenance manager in a plant. I know you work on actually establishing management commitment with your clients. So, what's your take on how important that is?
Well, to me, it's a hard toss-up. What's more important? The senior level support or the ground level support? So they're both very, very important to moving any sort of reliability improvement journey forward. Mm-hmm. But since the article focuses on the management or senior level support, we'll focus in on that for this conversation.
Okay.
To me, it's absolutely vital that you have that. They typically control the purse strings. They can add or remove resources. So getting them on board is absolutely critical. Also making sure their expectations are managed is another very important piece as well.
Well, that's where you mentioned the journey, and I've seen some plants that are in some organizations that are just strictly looking at the maintenance team when something goes down, when a boiler fails, and it's going to be a month before they get it back up. The maintenance folks are just considered dogs. Why did this happen? Independent of them telling them for the last 15 years that this thing is on its last legs, is going to fail any minute, we need a spare, we need to replace it, despite all of the warnings and all of the message that a reactive system can be a really hard place to start from. But how do you break that? How do you change the management commitment from only looking to you when there's an emergency and then blaming you to being supportive?
So there's a couple things you can do. One of them is learn to speak finance as a maintenance reliability professional. Make the accountant your friend. Make the finance manager your friend. Mm-hmm. Learn what return on net assets means. Learn how to read a balance sheet, a profit and loss statement. Learn those things, because then you can have conversations with the senior leaders in terminology they understand. Most senior leaders, if you talk to them about RCM or FMEAs, they may not understand you and they might think you're partially crazy. But
there's a strong parallel in the product reliability world. That's the same advice I have, is you got to speak their language. You don't need an MBA, but you certainly have to, say, what's the return on an investment of an FMEA, of a risk assessment?
Exactly. And if you understand that, you can build a business case that driving OEE by 5 points, what is that going to return to the site or the organization? Aside from just putting more product out the door, is that going to be the difference of not having to install a new line to make up for the poor running that we have in the existing plant?
That's right. Right.
So you have to be able to build that business case and communicate it in a way that they understand, which is typically finance for those senior leaders.
Yeah. And well, part of that is how we communicate, isn't it? It's not just the language, and it's not just at the proposal stage or, you know, when you're looking for capital equipment once a year. It's pretty regular. It's not just send up the KPI measurements.
No, you think about stakeholder analysis, right? What are the things I need to do to make sure these stakeholders stay on my side moving this forward? So it might be regular communications. It might be some of them just want that weekly report. Some want to be involved in a detailed conversation. Some may want to actually show up in training, not for the whole time, but for bits and pieces to understand what's going on, right? So you have to analyze each one of those stakeholders or senior managers and understand what works for them and how can I get them engaged on this project with me.
Well, that's one of the things that the other James in this article talks about is doing a trade-off matrix, which I'm going to take a much closer look at because he's taken a look at the different functional departments that you're dealing with, say in a plant. And then he's looking at, and it's a perennial issue, is where a functional manager will optimize their resources for their objectives, sometimes to the detriment of the other parts of the organization. And what he did in the matrix is basically saying, here's what you're trading off. If we get maintenance right, here's what you get. So it's spun more positively, but it's also allows the functional managers to look at the trade-off of supporting maintenance program in the terms of what they're looking to achieve.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that's interesting about that, you say functional manager, so I'm assuming that's your operations manager, maybe a warehouse manager, maybe a procurement manager.
Oh, so he's also got design and procurement teams in there. Okay. So up across the chain. So I'm thinking the way it looks like in the article, it's the plant manager's staff.
Okay. So to me, we're jumping ahead when we go to that level right away. So when I talk about the senior management and getting them on board, that is your plant manager and any other key stakeholders like that. Maybe it's your corporate maintenance reliability lead or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. Once they're on board, then you work with them to define what is this going to look like within this site or within this organization, depending on where you're at. Mm-hmm. And a huge piece of that is understanding where the business is, where the business wants to go. Because let's face it, if operations has a different KPI set than maintenance, than whoever else, they're going to work on those because that's what they're measured against.
That's right.
So once you get the plant manager on board and and it's clear what are the plant KPIs, then we can start to think about cascading those down or breaking those down to another level, to operations, to maintenance, but making sure that each one of those functional groups' KPIs complement or work together to achieve that overall goal. Mm-hmm. So if I think about maintenance scheduling, it's a great example. So schedule stability, or how well can operations adhere to their production schedule, might be a good measure because that'll directly impact maintenance's ability to schedule and execute preventative maintenance. Right. So they're going to work together to achieve that common goal of driving better planning, better efficiency within the site. So you have to think about it a bit and make sure that you don't have competing KPIs everywhere.
Well, the maintenance and scheduling it's an easy argument to make saying, well, if we're not allowed to do the preventative maintenance, you're going to have unscheduled downtime and probably more severe than if we were doing the preventative maintenance requirements. Yet I've seen that get violated so many times. It's no, skip it. We've got to make our quarterly numbers. And you instead of down for a shift, you run the line again for a shift and just skip it. Whereas if that discussion occurs where it's, this is why it's important in the long term and good for your annual KPIs or your annual targets, for example, for running the business, that becomes a much easier discussion, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, so enabling, understanding the business, talking their language, understanding what's in it for them. And I would add, James, that it's not just the written down objectives. You've run into different plant managers that work for different reasons. Some it's the, you know, they were actually the manager that brought this new plant online. They were in the green field stage and developed the whole thing. And as it continues to operate, they may not have their heart into it. They may be looking for their next opportunity to start a new plant, right? Or somebody is just on the financials, or somebody is really aiming to be promoted to vice president in the organization. They're looking at it as a stepping stone. Others, it's their dream job, and they like the accolades they get when things go well. They may run the plant for personal satisfaction reasons. So part of, I think, reading and working with your stakeholders is understanding what motivates them. And
yes.
And being, you don't have to tailor everything for that, but being aware of that, especially in presenting or in discussing your objectives.
Yeah, absolutely. It's vitally important. You understand where they want to, what are their motivations? How can you support them in achieving their objectives? And then it's reciprocal. They'll want to help you and move you forward as well for doing that. Mm-hmm. And then part of that, if we think about like the team that reports to plant manager for them, for example, you have to spend some time educating them on why maintenance is important. Why do we need this little bit of time now? Or why do we do the things we do? Mm-hmm. And what's the benefit for them as a result of that? So it's not good enough just to educate the plant manager. You have to educate his team as well on how is your department work with maintenance? How does maintenance support you? And what are we going to achieve together? And make sure you nail that down.
That's right. Because the maintenance folks may not even be a seat at the table. It might be the operations manager, right?
Yes.
So it's, one is enabling that ops manager or whoever is your representative to the senior management staff to really know what you're doing and why it's valuable. Hopefully that's a champion for you. But there's nothing wrong with having three or four other champions that fully understand the value that the maintenance program provides. It's
exactly.
Think of it as votes at the table. You know, it really is. If there's a commitment to divert funds and if nobody really understands what you're doing, they're going to look at that budget and go, well, we don't understand why this is important. We're going to shift away from it. So you really need to build that set of champions is probably a good word for it.
Yes. And with that too, one of the things that maintenance for reliability professionals can do to help gain some of that support is nail some of the low hanging fruit, demonstrate the benefits of doing stuff correctly, and use that as part of your sales pitch when you go engage senior leaders. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to toot your own horn at times. I know from a technical standpoint, a lot of technical people aren't really into that. They want to just, here's the problem, I'm going to solve it and find the next problem and solve that.
Right.
We don't do a good enough job at selling what we do sometimes. And if we nail a couple of low-hanging fruit and sell that appropriately, we can demonstrate results without any investment. So we build some credibility and then can possibly leverage and get some of that investment that we need to take our findings in our program to the next level.
That's right. Yeah. A really good template is, you know, what's the problem? What occurred? What was the problem? What'd you do to solve it? And then what difference did it make? Right. And then what can we do better in the, you know, future is kind of an internal technical thing we can do, but capture the difference it made to the business. So if we change stocking levels of spares and we have less downtime or less waiting for spares to show up, we can calculate the impact on downtime directly. And we yes. know the cost of downtime. So it's get it into dollars and show the value, whether it's speed of repairs or effectiveness of repairs or effectiveness of the preventative maintenance program or any of those kinds of items. What'd you do? And then how does it impact the business? Get it in yes. dollars. Yeah.
Absolutely. It all comes down to dollars. Let's face it, we're in business. We're here to make a profit, right?
Yeah. Well, I did something like that years and years ago. We had a slide deck that the whole team was putting together. Pretty much any project, we had to create what we called a value slide. It was one slide, and it had those details on it. And our boss just rolled up all the tally of it, and he ended up with like $787,000 in savings, you know, or whatever the number was. I think it was in the millions. And that was one line and one slide. And somebody said, well, where'd that number come from? And then he pulled out this other slide deck and went, here's the 20 projects we worked on, and here's the value for each one of them. Now, we also used it because we were internal consultants. The client that we did the work for provided the source quantification of the value. So it wasn't our estimates of value provided. It was the client's estimate.
Yeah.
So in a plant, if you make a difference, who did it impact? And let's get a quote from them on what's the magnitude of that, the value of that.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be definitely just more evidence and more tools to help drive further support.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's too easy. I agree with you, James. It's way too easy to, all right, good. And a lot of folks work for the satisfaction of solving problems, and that's enough. I got a job. That's what I get paid to do, and I go do it. Well, in order to continue to do that, and in order to get the resources to make improvements, I think your phrase, James, is appropriate. You got to toot your own horn. You got to sing your own praises and talk about it in terms that matter to the organization.
One thing that I would like to see added to, say, a reliability engineering program at a university is bring in someone to teach them sales for one semester. It could be a basic sales course, just so they learn how to sell the stuff they do, promote what they do, understand the pain points of their customer, which is typically, you know, operations or maintenance or mm-hmm. the plant manager, understand those pain points and be able to communicate the benefits of what they do to them. So the basic sales stuff, you know, teach them that, because it doesn't matter if you're selling it externally to a customer or selling it internally to the team. The principles are the same.
They are. Yeah, very much so. As much as it pains me as an engineer to say that, it's it definitely is. So one of the last things James talked about in his article was this regular check-ins. And the way he phrased that section was hold coffee shop talks. And I've seen that done with some managers where they, you know, basically bring in a bunch of pizzas, or they buy lunch, or they are part of a regular, rather informal discussion. And one group I saw is they had the teams bring up what are their projects that they're working on, what are the major initiatives that are going on in the maintenance world, and what's their progress, and what's the outcomes, what's the successes that we've had. It's a way to reinforce the value part, but then the discussion turned to the management team. Well, where's the business going? How can we keep aligned with what you're doing? And it was a way to reinforce the commitment part and to provide the information, but not in a formal, there weren't going to be any new proposals made. There weren't going to be any major decisions made. And it was kept to being more of a discussion rather than a death by PowerPoint kind of presentation.
Yeah, definitely is. Keeping the communication open is vitally important, regardless if you're going up or down in the organization. And, you know, like you said, keeping appraised of where the organization's going, the goals, and how can we support that is absolutely important, absolutely vital. So if you have to do it more frequently, typically, you know, organizations set their strategic plan yearly. If you got to do it more frequently because your organization is changing that much, or the industry you're in is changing that much, do it. And it doesn't have to be formal. Using that sort of approach is very effective. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's more effective because people are more relaxed about it, more open, because they're not in a strategy session.
That's right. They're not committing to a direction at that point.
Exactly.
They're exploring options and becoming informed. Now I'm going to circle back to the way you answered this question right at the start. Is you mentioned that senior manager versus your staff, your team, the folks doing the maintenance work.
Yep.
So you then went into why senior management was so important. So should we save this for another episode? Is talk about getting the buy-in and support of your staff?
I think, yeah, if unless you want to make this double episode in one, it's probably better off saving that one for a separate episode.
Okay, well, let's do that. And I agree with you that it is vitally important. So it is worth exploring in and of itself. And I think a lot of what we talked about here still applies. It's going to be a little bit different spin or take on it, though, in order to make it work. And the motivations part is, instead of talking at an MBA level about business and finance, we might need to find other partners and other venues and how we talk about why this is important. So we'll save that for another time.
Excellent.
All right, great. Well, as I mentioned right at the onset, is we get comments, we get feedback, we email, we also get forum discussions on LinkedIn and other sites. And it keeps us abreast of what you're interested in. Oftentimes, not oftentimes, I'd say about once a week, I get an email directly from somebody saying, hey, you know, here's a question I want you guys to explore, or I'm facing this challenge. What's your guys' take on this in the show? Speaking for all of the co-hosts on the show is we love those, absolutely love those. And one, it lets us know somebody's listening. But two, it means we're going to talk about something that's important to you directly because it's on your mind or you took the time to ask us. So go over to reliability.fm where you'll find the Reliability Podcast Network. And this show, James's show, Rooted in Reliability, and a couple others, where you have plenty of opportunity to leave comments, to leave suggestions, or you can find any of us and send us a message directly. But take a few minutes. I know you might be driving when you're listening to this, or you might be doing something else. It's one of the few ways to get professional development and actually multitask effectively. But take a note or make an effort to let us know what's on your mind and how can we engage you in the discussions that we have. So with that, James, I did a short pitch there for Rooted in Reliability. What do you got coming up in that show? What's a reason somebody needs to get subscribed to that now versus in the future?
Oh, we got a bunch of amazing interviews coming up. So we focused a lot on interviews over the last little bit, and we're continuing to. We got Jason Tranter from the Mobius Institute that's being interviewed.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
We got Christopher Mears, the education director of SMRP, coming on. We have Thomas Wilkes from Plant Services as well, talking about the state of condition monitoring in industry. A lot of great topics. We just finished up an amazing series with Scott Kelly of Geometric Reliability. So make sure you subscribe. We bring in the leading experts on all kinds of topics, as well as going back to some of the instructional podcasts. I'm working on a few of those right now on parts kitting, on roles and responsibilities within your organization. So what I find people are interested in, that's what we're going to focus in on. So let us know what you want. I'll make sure to get those experts on that show.
That's great. Well, you've got some great connections there, James. And I think you're hopefully we'll see some more podcasts come online as these folks start to see the value of talking about what they do. That'd be exciting, too. So anyway, let James or I know or the rest of the team know what you're interested in. And we'd sure love to hear from you. So with that, James, I think we'll wrap it up.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, James. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.